anybody out there listening, if you have friends that you haven't talked to in however many years, you know, you see them on Facebook, you talk to them on, you quote unquote talk to them on Facebook, give them a phone call. Try to go hang out. Black Market Toast Podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cupboard, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it as something completely new. This is episode number 38, and we will be jumping off of Danny Elfman's Music for a Darkened Theater, which is basically a compilation CD of pieces from various soundtracks released up to 1990, which is when that disc came out. Includes Batman, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Big Top Pee-wee, Darkman, the theme for The Simpsons, the theme for Tales from the Crypt. And for anybody who doesn't know who Danny Elfman is, that's who he is. But he's also the lead singer for Oingo Boingo.
Which is what surprised me. I was like, the Oingo, he was the Oingo Boingo guy?
who are known for Dead Man Dancing and the theme for Weird Science, among other things. Early 80s new wave band, and the lead singer turned into one of the most prolific music score composers of our generation.
Yeah, I mean, he's on that very next level behind John Williams as far as things that you just hear the music and you know who wrote it.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm saying about John Williams is, you know, he just has those seven or eight themes that you just hear and go, shit, that's John Williams.
And if you've ever seen a Tim Burton movie, you've heard
Danny Elfman.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, you know, and it's all the great Tim Burton stuff, like Batman and
everything he's ever done.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything else was just blanking on me for whatever reason. You know.
It just kind of does that. Oh, also, he's the singing voice for Jack Skellington in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, not only did he write Nightmare Before Christmas, the music, but he also is the singing voice for the main
character.
Not
the speaking voice, just the singing voice, which is, it's amazing that those two voices go so well together when it's two different people.
Right, and two vastly different people. But it, I mean, it's really good. I do like musical scores. My background is classical music, so, you know, this is a very easy album for me to get behind and listen to.
Yes.
It was good. I mean, I actually wound up listening to volume 2.
Okay.
Just because I was, you know, I was in a groove.
Yeah.
So.
Volume 1 is split up. Each track is a different movie. Hmm. With basically some of them have several pieces put into one track. Whereas volume 2, they break it out into the individual songs or the individual pieces.
Yeah.
So you end up with medleys from different soundtracks.
Yeah.
What's going to stand out to most people is going to be that Batman theme, because that Batman theme is amazing, and that opening sequence for that Batman movie, the opening credit scene is
awesome.
It's iconic, you know. Yeah.
It is Batman, actually. I mean, but to me, that's what I think of, and it comes across well. It came along at the right time for my age. I mean, it was Batman.
Yeah, and it was pretty much for me too. It came out when I was 12, and dating my wife. The Easley High School band, the marching band, did the Batman show in 1989 when it came out.
Oh, nice.
And that was the first of three consecutive years that they finished second in the state for 4A. And then, we stopped going to state because we weren't winning.
That was really, that's kind of shitty.
Well, we went, 1989, they went, and then my first year was 1990. And we went 90 and 91, lost two straight years to Walterboro. And then the junior year, basically, Burns moved up from 3A to 4A.
Yeah. So, and they're going to win.
Well, but they took our spot. Or they took our spot. They went and took second. they won Upper State. We didn't go to Upper State. We just stopped going. I'm not sure what the decision making process was there, but we just didn't go to Upper State or State my junior or senior year.
Yeah, because by the time I came along, Burns was the high school band in the state.
Yeah.
You know, they just did all the stuff. They won all the competitions. They were, you know, everybody else was playing for second.
They were getting there at that point, yeah. But they weren't quite there.
They got there.
Yeah. Now they're what, a 5A powerhouse in
They're only 5A because we just came out with 5A this year. Like our state just
No, they had 5A.
They did?
Yeah. They had 5A in the 90s. I don't know. They may have gotten rid of
it. Oh, they had 5A for bands, yes. Sorry, I was thinking 5A for football. They did not have 5A football.
Okay.
Because, as of 2001, there was 4A.
Yeah.
And then there was what they called 4A Big 16.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah.
Big 16 were the 16, supposedly, quote-unquote, the biggest 16 high schools in the state. My high school was in there, even though we were, like, the third smallest 4A school, but because after my senior year, we had won 5 of the last 10 state championships.
Right.
They couldn't justify demoting us.
Yeah, they classified the Big 16 as 5A for the band competitions, okay. Which was your Irmo, your
right,
yeah,
right.
All your big
Stormin
ones.
And Somerville and Stratford and all the big high schools.
Sure. The only one I remember was Irmo.
Yeah,
because you know we saw them perform and they did Miss Saigon. The last year we went to state,
and awesome,
and it was awesome.
Yeah, it's Irmo, a lot better. Well, and that was the funny thing because that was always the joke growing up, and it didn't become this. It stopped being this very shortly afterwards. But schools like Irmo and Burns, we always joked that the bands were a lot better than the football team.
Well, that was the very much the case in Eastwood.
Yeah, we would go and destroy Irmo in football or destroy Burns in football. Our band was terrible. Like, we had the worst.
Well, and
high school marching band.
Irmo was so big in the early 90s that they split Irmo into Irmo and Dutch Fork.
Yeah.
Dutch Fork was a 4A and Irmo was still a Big 16.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Irmo was this huge powerhouse. They just had so many people to draw from that they're going to have.
They couldn't help but have really good program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how their football team was not on par.
They just
didn't care. Yeah.
Sometimes where you're located has a lot better chance of getting you the high quality athletes than just having a buttload of people.
Yeah.
You know, because we had the entire inner city of Spartanburg to pull from. We found some dudes that could run, pass, and throw, you know.
Yeah.
It worked out for us.
Yeah.
Our band was terrible.
Terrible.
But, yeah, they were Charles Barkley terrible. But the reason why was because we had the best orchestra program in the country, if only because I never came across a high school that was better than us. But we were...
You don't have many marching orchestra competitions.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was the fact that you started orchestra in fourth grade.
Yeah, okay.
You didn't start band until seventh grade. So all of your musicians got into the orchestra.
Yeah, I started.
And the bands were kind of the.
Yeah, you started in seventh.
In seventh grade.
Yeah.
So, you know, like me, I might have gotten into playing percussion or something else, but they handed me the viola
in
fourth grade. Yeah, I was already locked in.
Yeah, I played violin in third grade up in Pennsylvania, and then we moved down here, and there was nothing.
No.
So, yeah, so I ended up, at the end of sixth grade, they come around and recruit for both
for
orchestra
band.
And band both recruit to try to get people into their programs and I considered playing cello, but I ended up going with trombone. So
yeah, the orchestra has a 3-year head start, or at least it did in District 7 in Spartanburg. So you know, all of your really good musicians were already in the orchestra.
Right.
And I mean, that wasn't to say that we didn't have some very talented band kids, because we did.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it just the priority wasn't the marching band.
Right.
Your really good, you know, band musicians were in the symphony orchestra.
Yeah.
And so I think we were the only high school that had a full, like, 110-piece symphony orchestra because we were awesome, you know. But all of your, you know, top, you know, flute players and mm-hmm. the bassoonist and all the percussionists, you know, they were all in the symphony.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, most of them marched in the marching band, but, you know, they were really just awesome musicians. They didn't really care about
marching. Right. So. There are no marching bassoons.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there is not a marching bassoon. I don't know what that girl did during marching band season.
Usually they play the clarinet.
Ah.
Usually.
But why not march the bassoon?
Well, usually they start off on the clarinet and then go off to the bassoon anyway.
No. So. No. No, this chick was like the top bassoon player in the state. Ah, like, she was ridiculous.
Yeah, she probably did not march.
No, I don't think she did. She was also a genius, which I think helped.
Yeah.
She's probably doing something important now.
I like playing bassoon.
No, I don't think
talking to whales with a bassoon.
Yeah. She's doing some sort of crazy MIT engineering thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that was why, like, our marching band was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. College marching band. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Well, we're going to have a lot of marching band stories.
Are we? go for it.
Well,
because
I mean,
I don't have any, because...
The reason I picked this particular piece or album or whatever you want to call this, a couple months ago, a friend of mine from those marching band days passed away, just out of the blue. And he was a trombone player with me starting in seventh grade all the way through senior year. And he was our drum major for junior year and senior year. So really my band and marching band experience is inextricably linked to him. And he was much more into it than I was. He went on to become a music major and went to USC and became a music educator.
Yeah.
And he was a band director for several years and was really good at writing the marching drill and all that, and ended up the last few years he was a elementary school music teacher and really touched a lot of lives. And he passed away a couple months ago, and just wanted to kind of I remember listening to Music for a Darkened Theater. He lived in the attic of, like, an old farmhouse. His room was the attic, and I remember sitting in the floor listening to it on his stereo, and just absorbing it, you know, because, you know, this is what his passion was. So if you were sitting there listening to it with him, it imbued the music with kind of his passion for it.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. The music is inextricably linked with that individual, and he passed, and it was out of the blue. And I hadn't really talked to him in 20 years since we graduated high school.
Yeah.
And we were friends on Facebook, so, you know, we kept track of each other, but we didn't talk.
Right.
And if you have anybody out there listening, if you have friends that you haven't talked to in however many years, you know, you see them on Facebook, you talk to them on, you quote unquote talk to them on Facebook, give them a phone call. Try to go hang out. You know, do something, because if they go away and you didn't know, you know, there was no telltale sign that he was going. It wasn't a tragic death. It was tragic, but it was medical.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was no car crash. There was no trauma.
Yeah, there was
involved.
No event.
Yeah, there was no event. So there was no precursor to it, and he was just gone. And I hadn't talked to him in 20 years. And don't do that. Talk to people. Go hang out. He was down in Lexington. He wasn't that far.
Right, yeah. It's an hour and a half away.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so... He passed away, and I felt like shit because I hadn't talked to him.
Right. No, and I completely get it. And it's one of those things, but we always think, especially at our age, we're in our 30s.
Yeah.
We have time.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, you always think, oh, well, you know, I've got time to do this. You know, I've got, you know, we'll catch up later. You know, we'll do something later.
Yeah, he's doing good on Facebook. Yeah, I'll, at some point I'll talk.
Yeah, you know, I'll catch him at a reunion. You know, we'll do something. And yeah, you're right. I mean, you just never know. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people, you're right. I mean, if people mean something to you, keep in touch with them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more than just, the problem with Facebook is that it's made it so easy to feel like you're keeping in touch with people.
Exactly.
Without actually keeping in touch with anybody.
Well, I friended him 7 years ago, so, you know, we're friends.
Yeah.
We're still cool. Hanging out on Facebook.
Yeah, but it makes it very easy to do things superficially without, you know, actually making a connection. Yeah,
I mean, even if you're across the country, you know, make an action, you know, do a FaceTime call or a freaking Google Hangout or something, you know.
Yeah.
You know, have a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, talk to them, find out what's going on with them. You know, and he passed away, and he was single. He was following his passion and doing his passion and living his dream.
Right, really. And that's cool. I respect people like that because I majored in music education. You know, was going to go down that same path, and it just I didn't have that passion for it.
Yeah,
you know, I it was one of those things. It wasn't
Christian universities tend to. Well, that kind of thing,
yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't even that. And maybe it was, but it was just, you know, I couldn't get over the fact that, do I really want to be sort of broke for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Doing something that I like to do in a job where I can be fired at any time because music is the first thing that gets cut when they're cutting budgets.
Right.
You know, is that really what I want to do? And I talked myself out of it. And I mean, I regret it in some ways, and in some ways I don't, I guess because it worked out. But, you know, I always enjoyed teaching music. I loved my practicums. And I think that was the other problem for me personally, was that I enjoyed my practicums. Going in there and physically teaching kids music, I liked. I did not like all of the lesson planning and all of the paperwork BS that you have to do. Like, why do I need a 10-page lesson plan for the semester to teach kids music? Like, I'm going to hand these kids some music. We're going to work over the concepts, we're going to practice it, and we're going to perform it.
Yeah.
Wash, rinse, repeat. You know, that's it. We're going to do that ad infinitum until I retire. Like, you just keep sending me kids, I'll keep giving them music.
Next year, we're going to add in another concept.
Right, yeah. I mean, we're going to keep
doing... Each grade level, we add in another concept, you know?
Right. I mean, I don't need a 10-page lesson plan going over every minute detail because I don't know what they are.
Right.
Yeah, this is music.
I don't know what this year's principal is going to want played at their Christmas concert.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, I can't write, like, do fluff piece to make principal happy. Yeah. You know, it's... That can't be in the lesson plan. It's in the truth.
It is, but it's not.
It is, but I can't put it in there. So, but yeah, I mean,
I wasn't expecting him to be reading on page 7.
Yeah. It's like the Apple terms and conditions, where it's like 81 pages down, it starts saying a bunch of weird crap because nobody's reading. You know it. But yeah, so I mean, I think then that was the other thing that sort of drug me down was I don't like being boxed in like that.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Well, and he was in marching band, and then he went to drum corps, which for anybody who doesn't know is really awesome marching bands, basically.
Yes.
Where you go and you spend your entire summer marching,
getting skinny and playing awesome music.
Yeah, playing awesome music. Yeah,
that's it.
And that's one of those Fathom events that I suggest anybody who hasn't gone and experienced it go do. They every year they do a freaking DCI. It looks like they're doing a kickoff this year, and there's nothing scheduled for the finals. And I'm really hoping they do the finals because I don't really want to watch the kickoff event. I want to watch the freaking finals,
right?
Because that's when they've got everything hammered down and as perfect as it's going to be. And that's you end up with. You know, drum corps is getting 98.5%, you know, and stuff like that, which is one guy kind of stutter steps
once.
Yeah.
No, and actually it's ironic because probably maybe a month after your friend passed, one of my friends from college band passed, and it was the same way. Like, he had some medical issues, but... Yeah, we just sort of...
But semi-minor medical issues.
Right. You know, well, and our problem was, like, AJ left after his second year.
Uh-huh.
And so we never really got to keep in touch because he left schools.
Yeah.
You know, and... But he was the same way. Like, he would... We always joked, you know, we had talked about it before, that, you know, he would leave for drum corps at, like, 230 pounds, and he would come back at the beginning of the semester, damn, 200 pounds, as skinny as he's ever going to be. He's in great shape. He can run circles around you, and then he just spends the rest of the year getting fat again.
Yeah. Spent the rest of the year getting fat and pale?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Went off for the summer, came back skinny, came back tan. Skinny and tan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Except for that weird mark where the hat goes. Yeah.
Sometimes.
But yeah, it... But yeah, and that was, you know, but drum corps was good. I mean, I used to love going to and watching it.
You know, yeah.
We made a point one year to drive down to watch DCI because we had friends performing, you know.
And I think last year was the first time Carolina Crown won the world championship.
Which is
Carolina Crown is based out of Rock Hill.
Fort Mill, yeah.
Yeah, Rock Hill, which is basically Charlotte. But yeah, just south of Charlotte in Rock Hill, Fort Mill area.
Yeah.
And they formed their core in like 94, 95.
Mm-hmm. They were perennially like sixth or seventh place when I was in college.
Yeah. Which that is amazing that they got that far, far that fast. They rocketed up out of nowhere. My friend Matt, he marched for the cadets of Bergen County, mm-hmm. Which is just one of the old tradition, drum corps. And they are, I believe they might be the last one, but they were one of the last one or two in 94, in the mid-90s, that starts with your right foot marching. So instead of everybody else, count one as your left foot.
Yeah.
Cadets, count one as your right foot. So, you know, he had to...
He had to retrain himself, you know,
go do freaking drum corps all summer, come back for band camp in August for high school, and use the other foot. Oh yeah, and you're the drum major. Yeah. So,
but yeah, and that was, you know, I know my buddy AJ was he marched in Phantom Regiment, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, they were always top five.
Yeah, they were good. They're top five.
Yeah, I mean, he was proud to have made mm-hmm. that corps, and because it is, that stuff gets very, very competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't actually know, like, what happens if you don't make it. Like, do you just fall into a lesser core, or...
I mean, that basically, you don't get relegated down or anything like that.
Let's say you try out for, Phantom, and you don't get it. Do you just sort of...
If you try out for Phantom and you don't get it, you try out for another core.
Yeah.
They are independent bodies.
Yeah.
There is another tier under, you know, there's the world class and then another tier down.
Yeah.
And you can go for those. And that's where things like Carolina Crown started.
Right. And I think that was AJ's whole thing. He's like, well, I'll drop a Phantom. If I don't get it, I'll march Carolina Crown.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good. I won't have to drive all the way to Indiana or wherever they're based out of. I could just drive to Fort Mill. It'll be all good.
Yeah.
And
that'd be a lot easier. Yeah.
That saves my travel expenses.
Yeah.
But then
they age out at 23, I believe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you get to do 6 years, roughly, usually.
So yeah, which is, I mean, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
basically, you're the end of your high school years because you have to be good enough to make the squad,
right?
And then your college years are basically covered.
Yeah. And that stuff is really, it's cool. It's there's a difference, though, between, like, watching a really good college marching band and watching a drum corps. Like,
well, yeah, and most college marching bands, your drum corps takes more of the competition side of the high school marching band.
Yeah.
Whereas most college marching bands are just playing for...
Show.
Yeah. Learn this for this week for the football game.
Yeah.
Basically. So you end up with Ohio State doing a different show every week.
Yeah.
But the drum corps is more, this is our concept for this year. We're going to pound this down and refine it and make it as awesome as it can possibly be.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think is cool. And a lot of that stuff, it is so precise. Like, mm-hmm. It is like Swiss watch precise. And it's awesome to watch. It really is. I sit there as a musician and I mean, I like the music, but what impresses me is the marching and the exact patterns.
You were running.
Stuff that I can't do.
You were running while playing an instrument,
right,
while keeping time.
Right. And your feet are right. Like, that's crazy. But it's, I don't know. I think as a musician, I always admire someone who can do something I can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to be able to play while you're moving and all of that, mm-hmm. that impresses the crap out of me. Because
yeah.
I'm used to sitting in a chair and, you know, just twiddling the fiddle.
Yeah.
Or standing there and singing, you know, or, you know, doing some minor acting while I sing or whatever. And so just to watch them be able to sprint around and do all that crap,
yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's awesome. Yeah. Go, you guys. No wonder you come back like 30 pounds later.
Yeah.
Like, you guys have been running wind sprints all summer.
Believe about a month ago, one of the South Carolina state representatives actually pushed an initiative to get marching band counted as a physical education credit.
That's good.
Which it should be.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, here's the thing. It's as physical as, you know, walking around the track. I mean, it's...
as volleyball or, yeah, whatever, you know, the person who's not athletically inclined is going to just kind of stand over on the side while you're playing anyway.
See, in PE, at least in high school, the kids who were not athletic, they just walked around the track. This is what they did. They walked around the track in a clump and they just bullshitted the entire
time.
Entire semester. But see, the cool thing about mine was if you were on the football team, you could just take what they call weight training.
Uh-huh.
Which you did the lifting you were going to do after school, during school.
Yeah.
It's great. That's maybe like 45 minutes to an hour after school. Perfect.
I was not on the football team.
I know. You were in the marching band.
Yes. Because our marching band was number two in the state.
Right.
Our football team was crap.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Our football team won one game every year against Malden, who won no games every year.
I know, dude. I loved playing Malden because they were so bad. Now apparently they're good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Whatever.
Don't know what's changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, but going back to Danny Elfman, it's he's still writing for a lot of movies.
Yeah, he's still
sort of Tim Burton's personal.
Yeah, he's horribly prolific. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really you can, picking out Elfman's music, if you can hear it by ear, it's more by tone than by anything else. Because he goes for that raspy tone that a lot of composers back away from,
right?
And that does excellent for marching band,
mm-hmm.
Because you know there are those times when if you got a stadium full of people and you just you're playing, and suddenly everybody's freaking bells go up and you start wailing,
yeah,
you just got your audience, you know,
right. Oh, yeah.
you just.
Yeah, it's right, and in the same way that a guy like, I guess, if you're gonna go like, how do you recognize John Williams? It's the horn themes.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's mostly French horns,
right.
So it's more of a subdued sound,
right? And that's one of those things. Like, I don't know if John Williams was a French horn player, but surely he played a brass horn.
But he certainly had a crush on one.
Absolutely, because he loves the French horn and just the horn section in general, because all of his big important themes are played mainly by the horn section.
Yeah, and Elfman loves a good tuba blast or a freaking trombone belt blast or a freaking
some
trumpet
deep...
going bing, you know. So yeah, he and his sforzando piano is impeccable. You hit it and you back off.
Yeah.
To piano quick, and that's just everywhere in his music.
Yeah, John Williams played the trombone on the trumpet, which makes sense, I guess.
Did he marry a French horn player?
No, not sure. Probably so. But Elfman does, he has, it's a lot more. John Williams is very much in the romantic era of music.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, big, sweeping, you know, fortes. And
you know,
it is very much in that sort of Tchaikovsky sort of style.
Yeah.
Whereas Elfman is 20th century music. It's a lot more, I wouldn't call it disjointed, but it's...
Right. it embraces the darkness.
Yes.
But at the same time, some of his best stuff is when it's embracing that darkness and it's playful.
Yeah.
Like, his Beetlejuice theme is freaking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's great. And it's one of those things, I don't know why I'm sure he gets enough credit.
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't ever seem to be mentioned in that same tier with the great movie composers.
Right.
But, and I don't know if it's because the movies were a little more dated, you know?
He doesn't go for, he hasn't gone for the Indiana Jones, Star Wars.
Well, we always joke that stuff like that is like classical pop music.
Yeah.
You know, it's written.
And that's all John Williams. Popular.
Yeah.
John Williams.
He's gold. And there's a couple others that are like that.
Where Elfman writes to the piece.
Right.
You know, he doesn't write to the audience. He writes to the piece. He writes to the atmosphere. He develops the sound of the movie that should be there. And I was going somewhere with that. One of my favorite pieces by him, it didn't make it onto Music for Darkened Theater. It's on the Darkman soundtrack. And it's Carnival from Hell. And it's one of those juxtapositions. It's, you know, the marimba playing the carnival sounds, and then just this low brass undertone of just darkness under it, and it plays off each other beautifully. So, yeah, it's that playful and dark at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck finding it. I don't think it's on Spotify. I've tried.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You may have to find it on, like, YouTube or something.
Will.
But, yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to listening to it in the not-too-distant future.
And, I mean, here's the thing, and I'm randomly looking this up. I was looking up, like, IMDb, like, top 20 movie composers. Uh-huh. Danny Elfman all the way down at 15. They've got him behind, like, Randy Newman.
Fuck them.
Yes, which, I mean, Randy Newman, yeah.
Well, and...
You know, people like Ennio Morricone and, you know, Hans Zimmer, like, I understand that, you know.
There are only two movies that I can think of where they released a soundtrack and a score separately.
Yeah.
And the first of those was Batman, which Prince did the soundtrack, and Elfman did the score. And that score far outshines that soundtrack. Yes. I don't care what you say.
Right. No, I agree with you on that completely.
And the other one is The Crow, where they came out with that just loaded soundtrack, and then Graham Revell's, kind of atmospheric score, which is nothing special. So, but yeah, that Batman score is, it's just so iconic. That's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I don't know. This sort of makes me want to go back and do music again. You know, like listen to this sort of stuff. And I really, like, there is still a part of me that really wants to take my viol out from behind the shelf behind you and, you know, just
and
play.
And viol.
Yes, and viol.
As you do.
But if there was a place for me to go viol, I would go do it. But really, like, where does a 31-year-old guy go to play the viola in a group setting?
Well, as long as you want to pluck it and hold it across your chest, there are plenty of places.
The Ren Fair? It's a lute.
It's a lute. Shut up.
I'm going to do that.
I guess we'll leave it on that.
Yes.
do you have anything in mind for next time?
God, I just woke up like 25 minutes ago, 35 minutes ago, maybe?
It's at least 35 minutes ago.
Okay, I woke up like an hour ago. let's do it to be determined.
Okay.
We'll come up with something.
Yeah, Joe's going to come up with something. Because the next one I'm going to do is a Studio Ghibli, because that's what I said last time.
Yes.
But this is your turn.
It is my turn.
So you have to do it.
Do it. Do it now.
Yeah. So I am at Woodle on the Twitter and the Instagram, and you can follow us on the Black Market Toast Facebook page. And you are?
I'm that Joe you know on Instagram. I'm the Joe you know on Twitter.
And we are not 100% sure about any of that information.
I am, actually. I've looked it up.
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
And we will talk at you next time. Did I waste time?